This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, a network of more than 40,000 people dedicated to the appreciation of beer, cider, and mead. Join the AHA for just $3.99 a month at homebrewersassociation.org. That's homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, November 19th, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Steve Wilkes and I explore malt sampler number 5. This time, we compare black malts, midnight wheat, black patent, and black prins. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, and if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs and our brewer's logbooks. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who is helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Well, yesterday evening, Steve and I got together to shoot 2 video episodes. The first was on the latest incarnation of my Rye Wit, which is not really a wit beer, but a beer brewed with only rye and wheat. This version was a collaboration of longtime listener Greg McGill and I. Greg owns Brewocracy down in Hamilton, New Zealand. It's hard to say. The beer is only 1.7% ABV, but it has a ton of Nelson Sauvin hops with a bit of Centennial there at the end to kind of balance things out. Hope to get that episode out to subscribers along with the recipe and behind the scenes video by the end of the week, with the general public getting the video on Thanksgiving Day. Speaking of which, I'm taking next week off from posting the audio podcast. We're planning a low-key Thanksgiving this year, the first year that we're not heading to Hot Springs to join family. Just too much virus in the state and too much at stake. We've got a 3-pound turkey breast. And I'm planning to smoke that for the 3 of us who will be here at the house. I hope that your Thanksgiving is a happy and safe one, no matter what the configuration or where you are. Steve and I also shot a video featuring his apple wine. It's essentially cider on steroids, or at least cider with a boost of extra sugar. Way high in alcohol, but, you know, you can't necessarily tell it. It's not hot. But it's, you know, very well made and well cared for, and it's got lots of apple character. And I saved most of the bottle to share over the holidays with Susan. Hey, if you've been following our friends and sponsors Ricky and Kelly at Groenfell Meadery in Vermont, you know they're getting ready to send out bottles of their Groenfell Ancient collection. You know Groenfell for their deliciously drinkable moderate gravity craft meads. But this ancient collection is something different and very special. It's a 3 mead set in a collectible ceramic bottle, or in 3 collectible ceramic bottles. This first batch is in black bottles, and they're planning future releases to be in white bottles, so you want to snatch these up if you're a collector. These are a departure for Groenfell. They're stronger and sweeter than the usually dry and delicious Groenfell meads. These range from 15.1% to 19.2 ABV. There's Brag Eye, which is honey, of course, black currants, elderflowers, rose hips, and a touch of juniper berry. Hegir, which is European cherries blended with wildflower honey aged on cherry wood. And Veneer, which is wildflower honey fermented on 3 European strains of yeast, aged on carved ash wood and oak. You can pre-order your ancient collection from Groenfell.com. Ricky and Kelly expect to ship starting this week, and they posted a video of the preparations. So it sounds amazing. Find out all the details and order yours, the ancient collection, at Groenfell.com. That's Groenfell. Take a quick look into the mailbag for a couple of hop-related questions. The first comes from Jeff in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Jeff says, I brewed a New England IPA 2 weeks ago, and it's been in the keg for 1 week. I poured the first pint 2 days after kegging and noticed what appeared to be dark flakes settling to the bottom of the glass. Thinking it was hop particulates at the bottom of the keg, I pulled two more pints over the course of the following 2 days and still noticed the same thing. I pulled my tap faucet, completely disassembled, and shank, then soaked them in PBW for 35 minutes at 125 degrees Fahrenheit, then gave them a thorough rinse and reinstalled them in the kegerator. The same thing happened. Next, I cleaned the dip tube in the same way. Still, the issue wasn't solved. Jeff says, I hit all the parts of the keg with PBW before this, so this was to rule out any doubt gremlins running rampant in the back of my head. The hop schedule for this particular recipe called for 2.5 ounces of boil hops, 4 ounces of whirlpool hops, and 6 ounces of dry hops. I filtered the finished beer through my 300 micron hop spider into a brew bucket, then siphoned it to the keg. I'm guessing the couple dark particles in each glass are hops that I wasn't able to filter out, but they look like black ash. Jeff says, I had the thought that it may be nickel plating for my shanks, which really skeeved me out. If I were in a different personal situation, I'd just go buy 3 new stainless shanks for my kegerator. However, that's just not in the cards at the point. Well, sorry to hear that you're having problems, Jeff. I've never heard of hops turning black in a fermenter or a keg. But I told Jeff if it were me, I'd step up to beer line cleaner and make sure that the dip tube and other parts are really clean and that, you know, there's not just gunk from previous beers coming through. You know, I thought I was doing a good job of cleaning my kegs until I used a BLC for the first time. And I've talked about this on the show. All kinds of gunk, you know, came out of my dip tube after soaking in that stuff for a few minutes. So I suggested that to Jeff to see what happens, make sure everything is nice and clean. What do you think? Black hops? It's kind of like black ops. Drop me a line and see if you've had a previous experience like that. This note comes from Greg in Nampa, Idaho. Greg says, early last year, my wife purchased a truly endearing brewing gift for me, a 2-kettle, 30-gallon horizontal warthog system from High Gravity. Wow. After all the kudos you've given High Gravity, it seemed this was the perfect fit. They certainly have wonderful products and the terrific folks with which to work. Around this same time, my home brewery on the back of our new shop was completed and is ideal for electric brewing and keeps me out of the kitchen and the house. Wow. Very nice. I'm jealous, Greg. Greg says, in a couple weeks, my longtime early 80s high school friend and brew buddy, appropriately named Steve, and I are brewing a 20-gallon recipe Arrogant Bastard clone. As you've mentioned before, IPAs tend to have the most prominent hop character when freshly kegged and bottled. We plan to put additional hops in the kegs that may sit a couple months after the brew to maintain hop flavor. This leads to the primary reason for this inquiry. Have you ever tried dry hopping in the bottle to get the same effect? The hops used in the recipe are Chinook, and it crossed my mind the other day to put 1 to 2 pellets in each bottle that may sit a while to keep that hop-forward flavor. This has probably already been tried and not been on my radar. Since I'm not a social media guy, however, I do not recall having heard of this procedure before. Well, hopping in the bottle sounded really familiar to me, so I did a quick Google search, and I found a thread on Homebrew Talk on dry hopping in the bottle. The second reply in the thread read, I just listened to Basic Brewing Radio where someone wrote it and said they tried it and it was horrible. A ton of sediment. And they said it foamed like crazy too. Well, the post was from 2009. So I guess I can be forgiven for forgetting it. We had addressed the issue on the show. Anyway, most of the comments were negative in that thread, but there were a couple positive posts on people using especially whole hop cones in bottles of beer, including a link to a Mad Fermentationist post where Mike Tonsmeyer bottled hopped a Flanders Red. So I told Greg if he wanted to give it a shot with a couple bottles, I'd love to hear what happens. And as well as you, if you have feedback, if you've tried this, let me know, james@basicbrewing.com. We heard Greg singing the praises of his Warthog electric system from our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. Well, High Gravity is having a sale on gift certificates for the holidays. If you go to highgravitybrew.com, you can find all gift certificates for 10% off. So you can get a $100 gift certificate for $90, a $40 one for $36. Well, you do the math. 10% off. That means you can send Santa to highgravitybrew.com, and it'll be easy to find something that you love. Or if you want to gift something for a home brewer in your life, check it out. You can use your gift certificate to buy ingredients or beer kits, or be like Greg and step up to a Warthog electric brewing system at 10% off. HighGravityBrew.com is the place to configure your dream electric system, or simply pick out a turnkey system that's already put together for you. Take the pain out of propane with this sale on gift certificates. You can do it for 10% cheaper. That's at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com. Now, this was a delicious show to do, and we learned something. Let's talk with Steve Wilkes about black malts. Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James.
This, we've been sampling the, I gave you three extra beers that were labeled that you could tell what was going on.
Yep.
I've got extras as well, and we've been sampling these beers over the past, few weeks, and dang, they're tasty.
Well, they are. usually I stay out of the samples, and
even the junior samples.
Even the junior samples, but this time I just didn't have any beer packaged up here at the store, and sometimes about 4:30 or 5 o'clock, it's just like I just need a beer, and so. So these were the ones that were available, and they were cold. And man, I got to tell you, these are good beers, and they just are like dessert. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first of all, let's introduce people. Maybe this is the first time anybody or somebody. It's not the first time anybody has listened to the podcast.
Well, you never know, actually.
Maybe this is the first time someone has been introduced to the podcast. So what this is the malt sampler, and this carries on the heels of the hop sampler, where we you know sample small batches of beers made with single hops. This is a malt sampler where these are all grain beers. Made with, and there's six packs. I made 3 6 packs of all grain beer. Each one of these six packs has 2 pounds or 900 grams of two row, American two row, or what's the Breese pale malt? What is it? Breese brewer's malt. That's what two row. Okay. Just to be specific. And 2 ounces or 56 grams of each of these specialty malts. So what I did was I put those grains in 5 quarts or 4.7 liters of water at 164 degrees Fahrenheit or 75 C. And that gave me a mash rest temperature of 154 degrees Fahrenheit or 67.8 C. And I put that into my preheated oven that had been preheated to that temperature. And I held that for an hour, stirring about halfway through to make sure that things were happening. And then what I did was I collected my, this was brew in a bag. So I took my bag out and I squeezed my bag and as one does, and I boiled for 30 minutes with 5 grams of German Hersbrucker at 2.1% alpha acid for that 30 minutes. And then I chilled in an ice bath, which takes around, 12, 15 minutes, something like that. And then I transferred into a 1 gallon fermenter and added 3 grams of Safale USO5. And I've got the, do you want to hear the stats, Steve?
I would love to hear the stats, Steve.
Okay. So what we got here is we have, along with the 2 pounds of two row, we have 2 ounces each Midnight Wheat, Black Prinz, and Black Patent. So the original gravity of the Midnight Wheat batch was 1080, 1.080.
Wow.
The final gravity was 1020. So the ABV of that one was 8.1%. The Black Prince started out also at 1080. Well, okay, looking forward to my notes. All three of these started out at 1080. So they all started out the same. The final gravity of the Midnight Wheat was 1020, so for an ABV of 8.1%. Final gravity of the Black Prince was 1018, for an ABV of 8.3%. And the final gravity of the Black Patent was 1016, for an ABV of 8.6%. So the Black Patent, so in order of fermentability, the Black Patent was most fermentable, the Black Prince, and then the Midnight Wheat. But, you know, the difference between, well, I guess the difference between 1020 and 1016 is fairly significant. So we're talking about an 8.1%, 8.3%, and 8.6% beers. So each of these was bottled separately and primed with a carbonation drop, a Cooper's carbonation drop in each bottle. And then my wife, Susan, helped me bottle them, and she then labeled these, stuck duct tape on the caps of these and wrote numbers on them so that all we know is we are tasting beer number one, beer number two, and beer number three. So we don't know which is which. And, you know, we texted back and forth as we, you know, in the previous weeks. They're like, oh, I'm tasting this one. I'm tasting that one. Boy, this is really good. This is really my favorite. And so it'll be interesting to see if we can tell any difference at all between.
Yeah, I know.
Do you have any thoughts on beer number one?
Yes. I think it's just really chocolatey and rich. And the color of the head, I think, is the darkest of the three.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right.
And it's just like drinking a chocolate cake.
Mm-hmm. I think we were both amazed, you know, because we've made stouts and porters in the past. And my approach to stouts and porters is to add, you know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. I did not think that these simple malt bills would be this dang tasty.
Me either. That's the lesson that I have learned. I'm shocked at how good all three of them are, but we're on number one, so I'll stay there. But just I'm just amazed because I'm with you. It's like the way I learned to make all those other beers, porters, stouts, Schwartz beers, all that stuff. They had, you know, four or five different malts in them, or at least three. But wow. I mean, it's just like a base malt and, you know, a few ounces of your dark malt and you're home.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Yeah. You know?
So I'm tasting, obviously, chocolate. It's just like super, like you said, chocolate cake.
Because it's like chocolate cake.
There's some sweetness in there as well. Mm-hmm. Because each of these finished, you know, fairly high in gravity, you know, from 1020 to 1016. But there's a nice bit of bitterness there that my favorite word, balances out, that makes it drinkable. And the alcohol, you know, if you were – I wouldn't have been able to tell you that this was 8% alcohol. It's super drinkable.
It's very smooth. It's very drinkable. I could tell you it is because when I drink one of these, I'm just like floored. I don't hold my liquor like I used to. So
I hold mine in my hand. I don't know what you do with it. So it's not super sweet, but it is chocolatey. But there is a bit of bitterness in there in the background to balance it out and make it really drinkable.
Yeah, it's got. Well, it's just a big, rich, semi-sweet beer. So I'm super impressed.
Now, we were talking before we started recording about, you know, if you were to scale this up into, say, a 5-gallon batch, or to, you know, like with 2 pounds of the two row, say if you were to go to 10 pounds or 4.5 kilograms of the of the base malt, and then then you would multiply the, you know, the specialty malt by five. So there'd be 10 ounces. You know, it is a significant amount of specialty malt proportionally. So part of the program is we have the three descriptors of the malts, the specialty malts, and we randomize them, and it's your job to read the descriptor. So what the randomized first descriptor, what do you got?
I got it right here. I've got the very first one in no particular order is Midnight Wheat. Now this is from, all three of these happen to come from Brees Malting Company. Midnight Wheat is a 550 Lovibond product. Mm. So it's very dark.
Very dark.
Very, very heavily roasted. The flavor is officially subtle, smooth, no bitterness, astringent, or no bitterness or astringency, dry flavors or aftertaste. Starts slightly sweet, hints of roasted flavor, and is said to finish exceptionally clean. The unique characteristics of it, of course, this is from Brees, are that it's a bitterless black malt that can be used in any recipe calling for debittered black malt. Hmm. Midnight Wheat malt is the smoothest source of black color that any malt available. So it says that it'll contribute the same color characteristics as black malt. Now Brees's black malt is black patent malt. When they refer to black malt, they mean black patent malt. That gets kind of confusing for folks. So of any characteristics as the same characteristics as black malt, but without the bitter, astringent, dry flavors or aftertaste.
So if you want to add some darkness to a beer without adding bitterness or a roasty character, Midnight Wheat is supposed to be your thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's it. That's the descriptor.
Huh. Well, there you go.
Yeah. So the colors are dark brown to black tone. So, of course, you know, if you add just a tiny amount, you might do all three of these will work great for a color adjustment if you're using just a very small amount. But if you really, really don't want any flavor and you're just looking for just that little bit of dark color adjustment, I'd use Midnight Wheat because it's going to affect the flavor the least.
Or maybe if you're wanting to do like a Cascadian dark ale, like a black IPA maybe. Where you don't want the bitterness of the malt to clash with the bitterness of the hops or the hop character, maybe Midnight Wheat.
Yep.
I'm going to say beer number two is a little sweeter than beer number one. Beer number one, I got a little more bitterness.
Yeah, beer number one's a little sharper.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Not much, but a little bit.
And it's a little flatter. The flavor characteristics it's a little, compared to beer number one, it's a little flatter. Number one, it was kind of like the chocolate and then the sharpness. And so there was more of a contrast. There was more kind of a balance of things. Beer number two on that sip was, to use a term that you taught me, mostly used in wine and mead. Beer number two tastes a tiny bit flabby to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Still really good.
It's good, though. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're splitting hairs here.
Well, the flabbiness, to me, seems to be an issue of carbonation.
Oh, huh.
I mean, let me try again.
I thought, of course, he's been sitting a little while now, but the heads, there's still head in the bottles, and the head of the beers seem to stay.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I was just. You're right. It's not carbonation.
It's just right. a little flatter.
Yeah, it is.
It doesn't have a bite.
Yeah, the number one has more snap to it.
Hmm.
Yeah,
that's a good descriptor. But it's not saying that it's too sweet.
Mm-mm.
It's just saying that I'm missing that little bit of bitterness in that their first one. But I'm still going to finish the rest of that sample. So,
yeah, with number two, I kind of want. either a little bit sharper roastiness from the malt, or I want a little bit more hops. I want something to balance that sweetness.
Right. We've passed judgment on sample number two.
We have passed judgment. Do you want me to read sample number two?
Sure.
This is going to be for Black Prinz. And Black Prinz is a bitterless black malt. Subtle, smooth, no bitterness, no astringency, dry flavors, or aftertaste. Very delicate, clean flavor, mild roasted, malty flavor. I'm just kind of reading from Brees' spec sheet on this. Dark brown to black tones and color. The characteristics of Black Prinz malt is produced from hulless, H-U-L-L-E-S-S, hulless barley, and functions as a one-to-one replacement for debittered black malt. But with a smoother flavor. That's because the debittered black malts are made by removing a great deal of the husk, but not all of it. Since husk develops bitter notes during roasting, debittered black malts will contribute a certain amount of bitter, astringent, or dry flavors or aftertaste to a beer. Black Prinz malt will contribute the same color characteristics as black malt, but without the bitter, astringent, or dry flavors or aftertaste. It says to use Black Prinz in black IPAs, black lagers, black ales, Schwartz beers, and other beers for a deep, rich color with only hints of subtle roasted flavor and for color adjustments in any style of beer. Huh. Suggested usage levels are 1-2% for minor color adjustments with little or no color or flavor impact. 2-5% adds color with subtle, smooth flavor. 5-10%. Use in larger quantities for color plus mild roasted malty flavors.
Interesting. So the Black Prinz is basically the barley version of the Midnight Wheat.
Yes.
Let's take a quick break from sampling to talk about our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. Steve and I both love Imperial. It's the only liquid yeast Steve sells at stevesbrewshop.com. Steve says his customers are blown away at how well Imperial yeast works, and I am too. Imperial has an industry-leading pitch rate of 200 billion cells per easy-to-open package. My stir plate is dusty because I don't make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches anymore, and the recommended shelf life of Imperial yeast is up to 4 months, and we've used it after that, which is fine. If I pitch in the early afternoon, usually the airlock is moving by bedtime, and that's a departure from other liquid yeasts I've used in the past, where I felt I needed to make a starter every time to avoid long lag times. It's just my personal experience, but it's real. Imperial backs their incredible products with top-notch technical and customer support. Ask your local homebrew store about Imperial Organic Yeast and check them out at imperialyeast.com. imperialyeast.com. Beer number three.
That's my favorite.
Ooh.
I like that one. That is a little bit, it's a little bit drier. The flavor is a little, the richness is a little bit more subdued. It's not quite so candy-like. I could drink more of this than I could the other two as far as just its crushability, you know. I could drink a couple of pints of this. The other two are kind of snifter beers for me. They're great, but I couldn't drink a whole lot of them. This one I could.
This has a silky characteristic to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, are you saying that the mouthfeel is less for you or more?
I think it's drier.
Okay.
It finishes a lot cleaner. It's not as long on the palate. So I don't feel like I've just kind of eaten a Mars bar. And that's how I kind of feel with the other two, especially number one. I'm going to go back and review.
Now the roasty characteristic goes away. The chocolatey characteristic goes away pretty quickly on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that the residual, the final gravity, the residual gravity is a little high. Maybe my palate's just blown out at this point, but maybe I I feel that it's a little more chewy than the other two.
Huh. Wow. I'm just the opposite. That's crazy. Well, that just shows you, you know, everybody's palate's a little different.
I'm going to go back and taste the other two.
Yeah.
Ooh, number one is definitely more, there's more of a bite in number one. Mm-hmm. That's definitely, it's like bitter chocolate, which is still good. It's really good.
Yeah.
There's a sweetness to number two. Okay, maybe I'm backing off on my statement about the body. I think the body of the beers are very similar. I think number two has got a sweetness to it now. I find really appealing.
Number two,
the sweetness of number two.
They're all just darn good beers. And as far as like the difference in mouthfeel, kind of splitting hairs, I like the fact that for me, number three just seems to be a little bit drier.
Yeah. I can see where you,
And so I liked that.
Yeah, you're right on the head on number one is definitely darker. The foam is definitely darker than the other two. The flavor to me of two and three is more similar than number one.
I agree. The flavor of two and three have more alike than number one. But number one and two, I think, have more similar mouthfeel. And then, like you say, I agree with you that the color, the head color is the darkest of number one. And the head retention is about the same in my three beers. Actually, the head retention in number one is the most persistent. It's the darkest and it's the most persistent.
Number one to me is the more balanced beer as far as sweetness and bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is sweeter than number three, but I kind of like it. In the beginning, I said it was kind of flat, but the more I sip of it, it's more like, oh, it's chocolate cake.
Chocolate cake it's chocolate cake with coffee in it to me.
Oh.
Of course, I think all three of them have pretty heavy coffee notes and pretty heavy cake notes too. I get both those flavors out of all three of these.
I don't know that I get different. I don't know that I get coffee. I definitely get chocolate. This is like, you know, if you love chocolate, boy, this is a good it's a good tasting.
Yeah, number 2. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not
well, all
but,
three,
but I'm not the roastiness of coffee. To me, you know, doesn't come through in these, but that's, you know, that's my palate and your palate. So, you know, we haven't made a reference pre 1965 yet. So I don't know what's
well, it's coming. All right, our last dark malt of the day is Black Patent malt, and of course this is from Brees again. The flavor is dry, roasted, sharp to neutral. So there's a clue. Sharp to neutral. And it produces beers that are dark brown to black. It's used in dark beers for flavor. You want to use it in small quantities in all styles for color with little to give little or no flavor. Sometimes it's used with other dark roasted malts to achieve a desired color, often used to provide color without overpowering flavor that is characteristic of European-style dark beers. It can be used with or without roasted barley to brew a stout with more color and less intense roasted barley flavor notes. So what they're saying is that the roasted barley is going to have a more intense flavor than the Black Patent. And it may be used with chocolate malt to produce a porter with less pronounced chocolate flavor notes.
There's a hint to recipe makers out there. If you want to make a stout, use the roasted barley. If you want to make a porter,
use chocolate malt.
Use chocolate malt.
Black malt is not interchangeable with roasted barley. They point that out in bold colors. Produces dark colored. It says that it's produced in the USA from AMBA/BMBRI recommended 2-row malting varieties.
That's what it. I was going to say.
I just threw my paper like Keith Olbermann used to do.
Oh, it's Dave Letterman.
No, no. Well, oh, yeah, he did too. Well, okay. So these were good beers.
Oh, man. I tell you, I would drink, and I have, consumed a pint of each of these with with great enjoyment. I mean,
great abandon.
And you know, I want to make a beer out of one of these, and I think I may have expressed my opinion of this to you, and it would be interesting to see if it's still my favorite after we've tasted these three.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, we've got to do the find out which ones we think are which.
Yeah, the whole point of the exercise.
Well,
I have my opinions. Do you have your opinions?
I do.
Do you have enough of an opinion to reach out and take a guess on number one?
I think number one is Black Patent.
I think so too.
And I think number two is Black Prince.
Oh wait, no, slow down.
Oh,
I'm peeling number one.
Okay.
Oh. Uh
oh. Oh no. Really?
Yes. Black number one is Black Prince. What the heck?
Black Prince.
Okay,
that
and I was gonna for the record, I was gonna agree with you that was gonna be number that Black Patent was gonna be number one, but it's Black Prince.
I am floored.
Okay, so now between two and three, we got your Black Patent and you got your Midnight Wheat. I think number two is going to be the Midnight Wheat.
Well, I'm just gonna be contrary. I'm gonna say it's the Black Prince.
Because this tonight number two is my favorite beer, and of the cheater tastings that I've done in the past, Midnight Wheat was my favorite.
Yeah, it was mine too. So I'm gonna go with you there. I'm gonna stay with you because I really liked the Midnight Wheat when I knew what it was. So I'm going to agree. Number two is Midnight Wheat.
Okay, here we go.
And number three is whatever's left.
Okay. Yay, Midnight Wheat.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
However, now I have to backpedal, though.
Uh-oh.
Because my favorite tonight was the Black Patent.
Huh. Number three?
Yeah.
So number three is the Black Patent. So number one, the one that with the sharpest character...
Was the
Black Prince, huh?
But Black Patent doesn't contribute color. That's right.
What?
So Black Patent doesn't contribute color in the head.
Oh, I missed that part.
Yeah, I forgot. I forgot that.
So Black Prince is a sharpness.
Yeah, at least in these beers.
That it in this experiment
wow.
on this, yeah. Black Prince contributed to sharpness, and I would not say that it's acrid, or you know,
no.
There's no negative connotations to that, but there is a sharpness that Black Prince did bring to the table. That Midnight Wheat and Black Patent, good old-fashioned Black Patent, didn't bring.
I am shocked. The Black Prince tasted the most like a Guinness export.
Huh. Interesting.
It reminded me of it. So it was thick and chewy and big and had just that kind of roasty sharpness that the Guinness export has. And then the other two were just a little bit nice, a little bit less robust on the palate in terms of that sharpness. So I'm just so surprised at that. I didn't expect that to be the outcome at all.
No. I was going to predict that number two was Midnight Wheat, you know, when we were tasting these three.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to predict that number one was the Black Patent.
I was, yeah, see, I had it as Black Patent number one, Black Prince number two and Midnight Wheat number three. And so I have none of them right tonight. But when I drank them and I knew what I was and I knew the code, I really liked the Midnight Wheat best. But tonight I like the Black. And of course, now it's been a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe a couple weeks in the bottle, they've changed a little bit. They've
right. carbonated, you know, a little more, maybe. Who knows?
I don't know. Or I drink a Dampf beer and did a show earlier.
Your palate's been changed somehow.
And I've been at work for a long time. Yeah. I don't know. I'm really, really shocked.
But, you know, I would totally make a beer with just base malt and any one of these. With no extra, you know, no adding tons of other stuff in. Yep. I would totally make. There should be a. We've got the smash beers with a single malt and single hop. We need a. Mm-hmm. A dual malt and single. We need a.
Oh yeah.
We need a dwash.
Well, in the
Dmash. We need a Dmash.
That's right. In the printing business, you have something called a duotone, mm-hmm. or a tritone, or a quad tone, and so that's it. One ink, or two inks, or three inks to get the printing effect that you want. So we need a duo mash. Or tri-mash. No.
Well, I would totally do a full batch of either of these, mm-hmm. You know, with just the base malt and this just the single specialty grain. Because I think they were all three delicious.
Yeah, they were.
But, you know, they're different beers. And it just depends on your preference as to what you want. But I'm just surprised that the Black Prinz was more kind of sharp and, dare I say, roasty than than the other two.
I'm very surprised at that. But there you go. I mean, this is as scientific as it gets. I mean,
it's as scientific as we get.
No, well, you don't know the testing machinery I put this stuff through. I put this through my defibrillator of a gas chromato groundhog dealer.
You've been watching Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
No, Herbie the Love Bug.
Is that pre-1965?
Probably.
This has been great. This has been one of my favorite of the series, this sampler. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to the next one. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, James.
Well, thanks again to Steve of stevesbrewshop.com. That was a lot of fun. Remember, we're taking next week off from the audio show, but look for a new video episode next week. And I hope you have a great and safe Thanksgiving. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.